Welcome to Fire Your Therapist, a podcast with a radical perspective on mental health. Here are your hosts, Carrie and Dan.
Welcome to Fire Your Therapist. On this episode, we are going to respond to some feedback we got. Somebody asked us why we check in at the beginning of every episode. So today we're going to talk about checking in. We're going to check out what it means to check in. And we're going to check ourselves before we wreck ourselves.
Oh, no. I'm sorry, everyone. I will, as quickly as possible, bring us back into the year 2014. Dan, take a seat.
This is a special episode. Carrie, why don't you tell us why?
This episode, I don't know how special it is, but it's definitely unique.
To everybody out there who got really excited when I said it was special and then got really disappointed when Carrie said it wasn't special, we're going to get excited again because it's special because...
It's unique.
It's unique, okay.
It's unique because we're going to respond to feedback and it's going to be very meta. Because the feedback is about the show itself, not necessarily about a topic. And this is going to happen once in a while. And so we're going to have a unique episode where we have a podcast about the podcast.
What specifically was the feedback?
Well, we had some feedback that was a question about why do you do this thing at the beginning of every episode where you call it a check-in?
We're going to talk about checking in.
The check-in at the beginning of our podcast is actually quite intentional. And since our show is very emergent, we are responding to feedback in that way. So now is a time where we can talk about why we do it. Dan, what's a check-in?
Well, a check-in is simply a structure that allows people to take a moment and be a little mindful about where they're at, about what their day was like, about what's going on for them. And to bring that into the conversation a little bit so that that doesn't get neglected, marginalized, left out of whatever conversation or interaction transpires afterwards.
See, when you come into a conversation with someone or an interaction and you disregard checking in with where they're at before you speak or before you begin interacting, you could be skipping over something quite important. I think a lot of the things that people aren't going to offer up right when you enter a conversation, some of the deeper topics, like I'm going through something really serious in my life right now, if you're not going to share it, it's funny how much it usually impacts how you're taking in what someone else is sharing with you. So if I just lost my job and I'm really losing my mind over it, but then I have a friend who just went through a breakup and they're in stress and they approach me, they want to talk about it, and they don't check in, you know, they have no bearing to understand, you know, how many resources are available to me to be able to support them, right?
Right. I mean, I'm sure everybody's had an experience where they're talking to their friend and their friend doesn't seem to be listening and they get really frustrated and they finally ask, like, what's your deal? What's going on? And they say, you know, something along the lines of what you just gave as examples, like, oh, I just found out I might be losing my job. Oh, I just found out my grandma's sick.
Oh, you should have told me. I wouldn't have been here going on about all of my stuff. Exactly. I should have been listening to you.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so I love to check in at the beginning of every podcast because I get to tell Dan where I'm coming from. And so let's say that we're talking about a topic like harm reduction, but my check-in was, I really had such a horrible day. I really need to go drink right now or whatever. So it could pertain to the topic. That's a horrible example, but it could pertain to what the conversation is going to be about. So then you can actually be sensitized to what's the word I'm looking for? How close to home that conversation might hit for someone in their current situation,
right,
or context.
How personal it might be.
Yeah. Something that actually probably gets skipped over in a lot of conversations is things that we don't already know about each other. Like maybe someone wants to have a conversation or share an opinion about a judgment they have about a religion or a football team that they hate or love, and they don't know the other person has an opposite opinion. They just go in and share.
Yeah, I'm so glad you mentioned the word judgment, because that kind of links back to so many struggles that I think therapists and people in lots of professions probably have, where there's an illusion that if you don't say it out loud, it's not going to influence the conversation, mm-hmm. right? There's this fantasy that like, oh, well, I might dislike that, but I'm going to keep it to myself because they won't notice if I don't say anything. And, you know, we can pull that curtain back right away and say, uh-uh, that's going to influence you. You're going to show up differently. Your eye contact is going to be different. Your body language is going to be different. Your gestures are going to be different. Your facial expressions are going to be different. Your tone's going to be different. And our mirror neurology is going to pick up on it. Whether we're aware of it or not, we're going to know. Uh-huh. So it's just a good practice to make that stuff as transparent as possible so that if there is a judgment, it's part of the conversation.
I have a friend who continually is dealing with really difficult things in their life. And it's probably so difficult that it's difficult to even share, you know, when we get together, like, this is going on for me. So a lot is kept to themselves. But when I ask, you know, how are you doing? Like, I just want to check in with you and see how you are. If it's that big and they don't want to share it, and they use an answer like, oh, I'm fine, how are you? You know, switch the subject back to me. You know, maybe it's a very, it's too close to the surface, or they're feeling very raw or exposed and they just can't talk about it right now. The way that it impacts the conversation that I have is, oh, I understand that you're fine, so I'm going to go on and talk about what I need to talk about and maybe get some support from you. And I'm getting a lot of blank stares, or I'm seeing your eyes kind of wander away while I'm talking, or
right.
I see you sort of checking your watch all the time, but I'm noticing that in the beginning of the conversation, you said you were fine, and now I'm getting all these other signals that you're not fine.
Right.
And now I'm going crazy because right. I can't match up those two messages.
Yeah, and I wonder how much more vulnerable or risky or threatening it might be to respond to that halfway through a conversation and say, you're kind of ignoring me, you know, right? That's, especially if this is a close friend, it's kind of risky to say something that feels almost sometimes like maybe you're confronting them or challenging them, or maybe quite simply you feel hurt and missed and unheard. You know, that's probably a lot harder than simply adding a practice of sort of checking in. And it doesn't have to be as cheesy and explicit as we make it on the show. Mm-hmm. But there's something about like, you know, hey, where are you at today? Oh, I'm fine. No, really, where are you at today? Right? There's something about making it a little more, I mean, I think the word genuine is kind of cheesy also, but making it a little more genuine that gives you access to that, so you don't have that setup where half an hour later you're trying to figure out, oh, how do I tell them that I think they're a jerk for looking at their watch and not paying attention to me?
So it's interesting that you brought up the judgment you had about the watch look, right? And which could mean anything. It could mean, Dan, you've been talking forever, and I'm just curious how long you've actually been talking without checking in with me. Or it could be, I have an appointment, or it could be, I'm supposed to meet a loved one at the hospital soon, or it's, I'm waiting on a call for an interview, or it could be, is my watch working? It could mean anything, but right. Without that check-in, you won't know. But if you do check in and see, you know, what's going on with the watch in the beginning, it changes how you're interpreting the conversation. Maybe, Dan, you would never even have the judgment of you're a jerk, you keep looking at your watch, because the assumption you made was you're impatient with me, right? Or you don't have time to listen to me right now.
Right.
But it could have been something completely different. I'm thinking of an example of when someone sends a text message to a friend and the friend doesn't respond. And depending on the the substance Absolutely. Of the message, yeah, how yeah. you might interpret that, you know? How could it be misinterpreted?
Right.
And we all know... that you can drop service or not receive a text and phones go crazy. And we also know that people know that about cell phones and will actually use it as an excuse in a time when it doesn't happen.
Right.
Anyway.
Right. Yeah. The text message thing is a great example of, I mean, it's a situation where you can't really check in quite as easily because of the mode of communication, but it highlights what an explicit setup it is for those judgments, right? You send a text and I mean, most people know that a lot of what I do is either coaching or counseling or consulting or something where I'm in a room in a conversation where there's not a chance I'm going to pull out my cell phone and respond to a text while I'm talking to somebody.
Mm-hmm, right.
And still, hours later that night, people will be like, what's your deal? How come you didn't answer my text? you know, and if only they started that actual conversation with a check-in of like, so you didn't answer my text today and I'm curious what I don't know about your day.
That's a check-in.
Exactly.
That's a check-in.
That might help me make sense of that.
I'm starting to jump to a conclusion or have an assumption about why you didn't respond. But instead of saying, here's my assumption or here's my conclusion, you're mad at me, you're ignoring me, you don't care about what I said to you, you don't have time for me, all these things that we could assume and maybe reasonably assume if we have a history with that person of having a behavior like that. You can notice in yourself, I'm going to jump to a conclusion if I don't check out. Why don't I just lead with curiosity and figure out what really went on in their day? And then I can have a dialogue with them about what happened and also have an opportunity to share what it was like to not be responded to, which is the real issue.
Right.
But we tend to cover up with some form of anger.
Right.
Rather than vulnerability of, oh, it really hurt my feelings when you did that, or I felt like I didn't matter to you.
All of this is really reminding me of sort of a critical underlying piece of our paradigm, our worldview, that it might be useful to bring up, and that is that context isn't some taken for granted thing. It's the thing that produces our experience. And I think all too often people interpret what they experience with somebody as intentional.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Right.
They see that watch look, they see the lack of eye contact, whatever the clues are, right? They read it as, oh, this person intends what they just did.
They intended to be rude.
Right.
Or ignore me.
I can assure everybody listening that a few years in this field, and I guarantee you, everybody is an expression of their context.
Uh-huh.
Right? It's the nature-nurture debate is over. It's a waste of time. They're both the same thing. We are all a product of our context for whatever complexity that includes. And pretending that things are done with conscious decisions and intentional, it's just rarely the case when we're talking about these sort of implicit, subtle clues that we pick up in communication.
I'm noticing this is the first episode we haven't checked in.
You're so meta.
We skipped over the whole thing. Should we check in, Dan?
Let's check in.
Check-ins could be formed in any way. I've been through many varieties of check-in. Some of them would be, what's happening in your life right now that might keep you from being present during this podcast, for example?
That's one of my favorite ones to use when I do training.
You want to check in with that one?
Sure.
So what I'm reaching for is to hear things that might impact this conversation, this episode.
Right. Another good prompt that I've heard used a lot is, what do you want to leave behind before you come into this conversation? And what do you want to bring forward as you go into this conversation?
Mm. That's a good one too. So what is going on for you that might be keeping you from being present during the rest of this podcast?
Well, I'm really busy lately, busier than usual. And I know that we live in a city of folks that constantly run around feeling like they're important people with many important things to do. And everything is busy and rush, rush, rush in LA, but quite literally I'm a big baby about my schedule, and I limit it to 5 or 6 hours of work, delicately spread out over the day so that I manage stress and feel good about everything I do most of the time. But the last few weeks have been really busy ones, like dawn to dusk, 9 to 9, without more than like a 10-minute break in them. And it's exhausting. It gives me so much empathy for many people I know who are either parents of newborn kids and still working full time, or, you know, working two jobs and going to school, or, you know, it's really enlightening to have some periods of time where I lose my ability to choose my schedule and I'm just this busy, because it puts things in check for me a little bit. So that kind of tired, hard to focus, and everything's a little bit of a struggle, but that's where I'm at right now. What about you?
Well, I can relate to what you're saying, and I feel like you're describing part of my experience this week and this beginning of this year. I don't know if everybody can relate to that right now. I've been hearing this from a lot of people, the busyness and how this isn't like me, but right now, the beginning of 2014, it's just been like go, go, go all the time. It's very stressful. Lots of people getting sick in the same, you know, in the same context of the busyness, which is understandable, but unfortunate. When I check in, I usually reflect on past check-ins, and I used to have a theme. I don't know if you know this about me, Dan, but when I first started checking in, when I was a new trainee, I would either go first because I had a lot going on, or I would go first, totally not understanding. And when I say go first, I mean we would be sitting in a cohort of eight or more people, and everybody would go around and check in. And it's always left open that if you have nothing to share or nothing to say, then you just say, yeah, I don't really need to check in right now. So I went through this phase where I would share something that I felt was important in that moment, and I was a risk taker, and I would go first and either say a lot or a little, but I would go. And then about halfway through a meeting, I would then realize that I needed to check in. Okay, so now I have to check in about something else. I'm noticing there was a buzz, and Dan's eyes are darting around the room for a phone, and it totally made me show up differently.
So you're a risk taker, and you always go first.
Yeah, so I'm a risk taker, and I usually go first, and so I would check in. And then I noticed that about halfway through the meeting, something that I didn't share at all in the beginning was really keeping me from being present or really weighing on my mind or felt more important than anything I said in the beginning. So then I went through a phase of passing my check-in and then telling everyone, I need to check in now. And it's like either the meeting's almost over or we're halfway through or something. It always felt weird, but that's how I showed up. I wasn't someone who could share right in the beginning anything that really truly mattered to the context or to the people that I was with.
I really like what you're sharing right now, because it's reminding me of how much a practice of checking in starts to model a new way of being in a conversation. And even though it's typically thought of as the thing you do at the very beginning of some conversation, what you're highlighting is that one thing it can support is developing a new pattern for conversation where it's okay to be transparent about something that's holding you back from being present, even if it's towards the end of the conversation.
And there was actually a lot of shame around checking in later. I guess feeling like I checking in twice or letting people know there's something further going on with me made me feel a little bit center stage, and I didn't like that. But that's something I grew into. But I think as we're talking about that, I'm now considering maybe I was conditioned to answer, oh, I'm fine. Because I've been...
Yeah, I think we all were.
Right. I've been in this world of, how are you? Oh, I'm fine. And I don't know if anybody listening can relate to walking into a group of people that are all trained therapists and you say, oh, I'm fine. you'll never live it down.
No.
25 people coming in saying, really? You know, I noticed that you came in 5 minutes earlier than usual or later than usual, or I noticed that you sort of looked away when you said you were fine, or, you know, this doesn't seem like you based on the last time you showed up here. And oh my goodness, it just goes.
Yeah.
Goes to all these like deep philosophical places so quickly, and you can't get away with a fine. So I got very, very much into the check-in quickly. I was broken of that fine.
Well, there's a flip side of that, which is getting so enamored with the idea of checking in that the check-in becomes the entire conversation. Which,
like this podcast?
Which I'm not passing a judgment on exactly. Sort of like this podcast, but in a less intentional way. Which, even as I say it, I need to explain something. Sometimes that's the purpose of the conversation. Hey, where are you at today? And let's talk about it.
Right.
Right. Which
Well, some people think that that's what a therapy session is.
Right. Absolutely. 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 But just your reference to the sort of casual, like if you're a therapist around other therapists and you walk in and they say, how are you? And you say, you're fine. Right. The flip side of that is people walk in and 25 people ask them how they are. And to 25 people, they give a 15-minute explanation of everything that happened that week.
And we're out of time. We got to go now that we know how half of you are.
Right. Which is a kind of funny flip side of that. And what it kind of, you know, once you get past the overwhelm of, oh my God, I'm going to know everything about how those people around me that I'm close to or work with are feeling, you develop a different skill, which is, well, my check-in back to you is, how can I help you hold that all of this is going on while we get to work on X, Y, or Z that's actually right in front of us right now?
Yeah.
And so there's a more sophisticated skill that comes out of it later. But
you know what's interesting is some of the check-ins I've heard in bigger groups where one person checks in saying, there was a death in my family, which is a very delicate time in someone's life. And the next person checks in with, I've just had the best week. I fell in love. I got a new job. you know, my horrible roommate right. moved out, I'm on cloud nine. And right. then you have to balance that kind of complexity of someone elated and someone severely depressed yeah. and grieving. And it's like, okay. And then you have another check-in.
That happened a lot of times.
Yes. Yeah. It's complex because there's a tendency for one person to give over to the other.
Right.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm doing really great. And I feel horrible that you're not doing great. So I'm just going to hide all of my excitement.
Well, and what I think is really courageous is when somebody gets to the point that they say exactly that out loud.
Hmm. Yeah, right? Usually it's not said out loud, yeah, right?
Usually that's done
in
their head, and they're
just hide their
excitement. They say, I'm fine. Mm-hmm. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, oh, I just heard that somebody right. had a death in their family, and so I'm not going to share my right. good news, period. I'm not even going right. to let anybody know. Right. I'm fine.
Well, and the really sophisticated step I think that people can get to, and by people I don't mean just therapists, I mean everybody, is... Can you acknowledge and empathize and support what someone's going through and be transparent about your excitement or joy and share that as a support for them mm-hmm. rather than trumping their experience or rather than like annihilating their experience, right? Is there a middle ground where you can not do it in such a way that it like makes what they shared marginal and unimportant, but instead share it in such a way of like, can I lend you some of my excitement? You know, while you're going through this, and how would that feel, and et cetera, et cetera.
I want to talk about how when someone comes to me and they say, I have something really serious to talk about, and this is some sort of an ongoing thing for them that they're going to be going through for a number of weeks, let's say, and I'm going to be their point of support because they came to me, they shared it, we're close friends, and they're going to keep seeking me out when this thing is hard to hold. And then they find out I'm going through something, and how the dynamic completely shifts from wanting to lean on me to refusing to lean on me in a caretaking way. I have this double feeling of feeling taken care of, which is a great feeling because I feel cared for, you know, them wanting to not lean too much because they know I'm going through something. I might be less resourced. Mm-hmm. And then I also have this annoying feeling where I get cut out of the dialogue because someone decided that their issue was more easier to handle than my issue. They decided I needed the support. Instead of having a conversation about how can we support you or you support me or how are we both going to get support together, it's decided for me that I will be the one supported.
Hmm.
And they decide to really minimize their situation. And that's just really hard for me because I'm there and I'm helping and I want them to know like I can handle the complexity of supporting you and being supported by you at the same time. Like, right. Why do we have to pick one? Why does one person get to be the parent and one person get to be the child? Why does one person get to be the therapist and one the client? And
right. Well, it speaks to a level of collaboration and mutuality that isn't taught really. I mean, some people get it from the family they grew up in or the culture they grew up in or mm-hmm. the town they grew up in or, you know, they have some experience of it. But I think oftentimes that's how things are seen. There's somebody that's needy and someone that's supporting, right? So there's this very unilateral direction, and the collaboration that you're describing around holding both, I think is kind of rare. And oftentimes people in their head think they have to silently and implicitly on their own make a decision about what to prioritize and not do that out loud and let somebody share in that process with them.
Yeah, I get upset when the dialogue is closed and they're not sharing in the process.
Right.
And they're just deciding in their head, oh yeah, she's trying to support me, but I know she's going through this other thing. So I'm just right. going to decide to be less needy today. Even though I have a real significant need, I'm right. going to table it and possibly get no support anywhere else for it.
Right.
And I'll go home and drink a bottle of wine instead, or I'll go home and watch a sad movie and cry myself to sleep. But I will forfeit my need for support and go into social isolation, basically.
Yeah. And who knows if that process for them is about, oh, I know better what's most important to talk about right now, or it's, I'm actually too scared to talk about that because I'm so uncomfortable with my own vulnerability, or... You know, all of my sense of ego in the world comes from not being ever the one that's vulnerable and always being the one that's taking care of others. You know, there's so many possible explanations in that context that not only is that dialogue closed, but any of those other pieces of the context, I mean, I'm circling back to check-ins, any other pieces of that context that they could have shared bringing themselves into the conversation are also missing.
Right? Yeah.
Like
yeah.
if someone simply started with, hey, we're about to check in and I'm just aware I'm really feeling like uncomfortable with vulnerability today, so I'm not sure how much I can handle.
Yeah.
Right? That alone would have changed the experience of what you're describing when you realize 10 minutes later someone has made decisions about who's going to caretake who and why without even sharing it.
I have a really good example. It's very, so this will be vulnerable of me of sharing my own experience. It's a really good example because the severity probably of the needs and also the intricacy of the relationship. So my father passed away and I have two sisters. So we all were grieving the same person. We all were going through a similar experience, maybe different styles of grief, but we were all grieving. And I remember at one point when I saw how hard it was for my sister, I mean, it was hard for all of us, but there was like a moment where I was feeling better supported for whatever reason. And I felt so much for what she was going through because she had a different type of grief than I did. And she was grieving something I wasn't. And I turned to her and I said, I'm so sorry. And she said, what are you talking about? And I said, I'm so sorry because you lost your father. And because I lost mine too, I think she interpreted it as, oh my goodness, don't worry about me. You know, you're going through this too. And I was hoping that she would understand, oh, I know I lost my father too, but I also feel bad for you because you lost yours. Right. And I'm also recognizing it's a different experience for you. And I completely empathize with what you're going through. And I can hold the complexity of I feel bad for myself as well for needing to go through this experience. But it just struck her as I was forfeiting my grief, which I wasn't at all. I was grieving, you know, I felt bad about my situation. But to see her like that was also hard. So I felt like I wanted to say that or share that with her at the time.
Right.
Do you get what I'm saying?
I do. I do get what you're saying. And I'm glad that you shared such a vulnerable example. And I'd love to add that when I saw you and your sisters grieving together, I was actually pretty impressed by how much, I mean, and they're not therapists, they're not trained in any of this.
Mm-hmm.
But the way the three of you operate as family does a really good job of multitasking.
How do you mean?
Of grieving and continuing to go on with the day, of like,
yeah.
of sort of doing an overlapping process where the things going on during the day aren't distractions from feelings. All three of you were very clearly emoting whatever was coming up, but without having to make it like an unstoppable rupture. So there was like a continuing of experiencing each other as family and as collaborating on things that need to get done while also not avoiding the grieving. It was actually really impressive to see.
I've never heard that reflection. That's interesting. I'm inside the experience, so I didn't know what it appeared like. But when you said that, I was reflecting on our family ancestral history of we have Irish blood, we have English blood. And I used to always say that Irish people, they either want you to cry or laugh or dance or drink. Those are your options.
Sometimes,
or all of them.
Sometimes in rapid succession.
In rapid succession. But it's just funny because we were all cycling through all these different experiences. And
right.
There was always somebody in a supportive role. And there's always somebody in a grieving role. And somebody, you know, caretaking and someone being taken care of. And
right.
you can't stay in one state for too long in my family. But you can go through all of them comfortably or, you know,
right.
at least for a reasonable amount of time. And we also have a very large family, so there's always somebody, you know,
right.
to support you in whatever the circumstance may be. But I just thought that was interesting, that example I shared of how someone can be going through something that you actually really understand, but I had a moment of being removed from it, wanting to support her, and not necessarily ignoring the fact that I needed support. But it was definitely, I think she interpreted in that moment of, don't support me because you need support.
Right.
I'm like, well, of course I do. But so do you. And it's okay that we do that for each other and both be grieving.
Yeah. Well, you're lucky to have a family experience that has that mutuality, that has that give and take and that trading of roles as well as you do. Because I think evolutionarily, we remember our value by our contribution, not by how much somebody else caretakes us sometimes.
Right.
Right. We need both. Like, our evolution has wired us to need to do both. And I think oftentimes people feel like they're the victim of something horrible and they put themselves permanently in a role of like, I can't do anything for others. I'm too busy grieving.
Right.
And I hope that saying this doesn't sound callous towards anybody who is really struggling with grief, but our evolutionary wiring clicks on in a new way, in a more engaging way, in a way that supports growth more when we are also contributing. Right. So there's something about that dance that's really important.
I absolutely agree with that.
Yeah. To circle back to check-ins for just a moment, I'm mindful of the time, and there was one other thing I wanted to mention, if that's okay.
Is it something you want to have dialogue about, or do you want to have it as part of your checkout as a note that you wanted to be sure to share?
Well, I'm curious if you have a response to it. So let's.
Okay. Let's not check out yet.
So for anybody listening who is training to be a therapist or in some social service or helping profession, I hope you can hear what we've said in this conversation and recognize how much this relates to the work you might do. Because if you go into the room as a therapist and you don't believe in this process, in checking in like the transparency of our neurology, of all the things Carrie and I have been linking to check-ins and why they're so important, you're essentially going to be sending a mixed message and you don't even know it. And there's something really critical about supporting somebody's growth and struggle and emotional process that even as a therapist, you do so much better if you check in transparently yourself. And that doesn't mean take over the session. It doesn't mean tell hours of story, but it does mean if there is something that you are aware is going to influence your mood, your tone, your body language, your eye contact, you better share enough of it that it confirms what their neurology is picking up on. And that's, I think, a really big deal for people going into that field.
I don't know. I just always thought that it was interesting because I assume that people might think that we're flirting with the idea of being friends. Because it sounds like that, right? When you go and sit down with a friend, you're probably trying to share in fairly equal amounts or support each other in equal amounts. And then you're kind of asking, well, what's the difference between friendship and therapy?
Right.
What do you think?
Well, I mean, there's a huge difference. And I think that's a really common criticism that overlooks you're actually doing a job when you're tracking your own sharing and their sharing and the process of making meaning of it and doing so responsibly and transparently and methodically rather than just, oh, I think that story's cool. Oh, I think that story's boring, right? You're actually doing a job there even if you are sharing. And, you know, to get even more intense about it, I would say if you are under any illusion that you're training's a weird word, coaching, supporting, mentoring, whatever, your clients to be able to attune to others better, to be able to give and take in relationships better, to understand another human being's needs better. You know, they're not going to get far if they're relying on everybody in the world to be objective, silent, neutral, have no needs, and basically be like a really nice wall to talk to, right? You're kind of setting them up for disappointment. So the difference between that and being friends is you're doing it strategically and mindfully to build their capacity and help grow their ability to be in healthier, more complex relationships. And you're also not doing it at a bar for unmanaged amounts of hours. I mean, there's other bits of infrastructure that build, you know, the boundaries of the relationship. So why somebody would be scared to let the mutuality of feelings of support seem like a problem to bring into the room. It just seems crazy to me.
Dan, can you conceive of a type of a therapy where two people show up exactly as they are and the only rule is to track exactly how they're showing up exactly as they are and taking the temperature of what it's like to be with that other person being who they are and vice versa?
I can, and I think that is the exact mode of support that I would rather train people to do than to be therapists.
Why?
Because if you can teach people a culture of mutual aid, then we don't really need so many therapists, right?
Mm-hmm.
We need some. Sometimes there's a crisis. Sometimes there's serious loss and grief and trauma, right? Like, we need some therapists. But when it comes to day-to-day maintenance of relationships, we just need good mutual aid skills, and that's what you just described.
It sounds like this is something that can happen anywhere. And it's something that hopefully this podcast could help cultivate. You know, I don't know, in Los Angeles or wherever anybody's listening, is that this is something you can do with each other. It's not something you could just do if you're licensed to do it, right?
Right.
I can always check in with you, Dan, about how your day is. And if I don't believe you, I can check in with you again.
Right.
And try to track what it's like for me to check in with you, even. Like, there are people that, how are you doing? Oh, I'm fine. No, really, how are you doing? I'm fine. Oh, because I noticed when you said that. You know, and then here I am tracking. Like, I'm tracking your response. And I'm letting you know what it was like for me to experience that. That's really the only other step that I think is missing from regular conversations. That I would love to do an experiment before we end today. Not necessarily with us, but with people listening. I would like them to, for a moment, consider how many people they come into contact with, you know, on an average day. Try to count up how many people that you talk to about the weather, you know, surfacey conversations. How are you? I'm fine. How are you? And you're responding out of rote memorization of what a conversation should sound like.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, count up the number of people that you truly care what their answer is. And you're going to actually monitor how they respond to the how are you today question.
Mm-hmm.
And try to find out honestly what's going on and track that.
Right.
And vice versa, meaning sharing what's truly going on with you.
Right.
I would say it's probably contextually based in Los Angeles, like you said earlier, Dan, when you checked in. Everybody's so busy. We might be erring on the side of, how are you? I'm fine. How are you? I'm fine too. Good to see you. Nice day, right? Yeah.
Right. Well, it's sometimes strategic to be that superficial and safe, right? Sometimes it's a really good idea.
You're telling
but
me.
But when that becomes...
There are some people I don't want to know. I don't want them to know what's going on with me.
All the time, and you never have that other type of interaction that you're talking about, it gets to be problematic. And then it becomes... I mean, that's the difference between strategically deciding when and where to get support and cultural norms. And as soon as the strategy to never reach for true contact and support becomes the cultural norm, and you're breaching the cultural norm whenever you need something more meaningful, I think it's a problem.
Hmm. So does this feel like a good time to check out?
It does feel like a good time to check out. Do you have something you want to check out with?
I have two quick things I want to check out with. The first thing is I would like to share some things that are not examples of checking in with people. I already said the, hi, how are you? Or the, hey, what's up? There's another way of not checking in with someone and pretending like you are checking in. It's when you think you know someone so well that based on the way they look, based on the way they sound, or the way that they appear, based on the context they're in, like they showed up to work today, they must be fine. That we have this tendency to make an assumption that they're not sick, they're not struggling with something in their personal life, that they're here, they wouldn't be here if they weren't fine. Or you know someone so well, like you're married to them, or it's your sister, or your parent, or child, or something. And you jump to the conclusion that if there was something really going on, they would share it with me. That's not a check-in. You're not checking in with people when you're making assumptions. So I wanted to make that just really explicit.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I wanted to share is why we check in on our podcast. I wanted to really break it down during the show, and I think we did a good job of that. But the reason we're checking in on the podcast is that this show is very emergent. And we're not necessarily scripting everything we say. So if I'm going to say something during the show that just is going to just come out, like it's coming up and I'm going to share it, I kind of need to know what's going on with you, Dan. Because if you didn't check in with, I've been so busy this week, then I wouldn't know if I could let the show run long or cut it short because you had a long week and I want to be sensitive to that. Or at least bring it up like, hey, right now I could say, Dan, you've had a really long week. Do you think this is a good time to end? Should we keep this episode short? And I'm happy with doing that on air because that's the kind of culture I think that we're trying to build with a podcast, is it being transparent, emergent, and that checking in isn't something we're just going to do before the show. It's something we're going to do and actually transparently share that with the listeners.
Yeah.
Is there anything you want to check out with?
Yeah. It's sort of an implication that occurred to me about any potential therapists listening. And hopefully it starts a good dialogue with anybody that wants to contact us. But all of this conversation has reminded me how much the professionalization of psychotherapy has disconnected us from what we're actually aiming for. And I think the more people contemplate what kind of culture they're trying to build, what kind of relationships they're trying to support, you know, what is the world and how people operate in it that they're trying to create with their work, the more you have to question, is my profession the room I happen to meet in and where I happen to do things and for how many minutes, more than it is the mode of how I interact with people, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you come to the conclusion that I came to, which is if you have certain values around what that culture should be and how relationships should work, there's a lot of things about being human that you then sort of ethically can't ignore, right? And being someone's friend versus their therapist is no longer the marker or indicator of you showing up as a human. It's an indicator of like what room you're doing it in and for how long and, right, like how you manage the time and what are the goals of the time and, right? So there's always going to be factors that structure it. But I wonder if people examined how their values play into what they're doing, it might influence how they see things like check-ins, like transparency, you know.
So you're naming some of the values that you're holding when you do the work. Transparency,
right.
Anything else that we haven't explicitly said?
Collaboration, sustainability, diversity. I mean, there's a whole bunch of really important values that guide me.
I think the check-in is a really good example of collaboration.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And it's also an example of transparency. Well, I mean, I guess you always get to choose the degree to which you're going to share and be honest and transparent, but the check-in is a great time to do that.
Absolutely.
And the check-out. And check-out, again, say it's really hot in this room, and so we're going to finish. Thanks for listening, and this episode was absolutely based on feedback that we got from one of our listeners, and I feel like it really stirred something up for me that was interesting to talk about. So if you have anything that you want to share, anything that came up for you in this episode or others, please email us at feedback@fireyourtherapistshow.com. You can tweet us at FYTshow, or you can like us on Facebook. Fire Your Therapist is brought to you by Yumi Media. Yumi Media offers a very custom production solution with quite intentional design. I can say for myself that when we started Fire Your Therapist, we really only had an idea. When we approached Yumi Media, they took care of everything else, everything. They designed our logos, they put us on iTunes, made a website, they made it possible for us to not only record the audio, but they brought the equipment. And although we're a small-scale production based in Los Angeles, you know, Yumi Media is based in Los Angeles, so it's not only convenient for us, but I know that they work overseas. They travel for different, you know, large-scale productions like conferences. They bring everything, lighting, video, audio, photography, anything that you would need for any sort of production or conference. They bring it, and then when they're done, they do post-production, editing, audio, video, everything. You really only need to have an idea. So if you have a project that you're looking to work on, please contact Yumi Media. Send in your questions and they'll let you know how that they can work with you in a very custom way that fits exactly what you're trying to do on your project. They really honor your ideas, and I think that that's the best part about them. Please contact them at info@umimedia.com or go to their website, umimedia.com, and that's spelled YOUMIMEDIA.com. You can also call them 310-989-0138.
Fire Your Therapist was produced by UMI Media. Subscribe to our free podcast on iTunes or go to fireyourtherapistshow.com where you can find podcasts, resources, and more.